Reading Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, Chapter 16, entitled How Pariksit Received the Age of Kali, Text Number 16. Saracha Parasada Sivana Sakya Ducha. Saracha Parasada Sivana Sakya Ducha. Virasana Nugamana Stavana Pranaman. Snigde Supandusu Jagat Pranatim Chavishnu. Bhaktim Karoti Nripatis Charanaravinde.
Bhaktim Karoti Nripatis Charanaravinde.
Satya.
Satya.
Accepting of the post of a chariot driver.
Accepting of the post of a chariot driver.
Parasat.
Parasat.
Acceptance of the presidency.
Acceptance of the presidency.
In the assembly of the Rajasui sacrifice.
In the assembly of the Rajasui sacrifice.
Sivana.
Sivana.
Engaging the mind constantly.
Engaging the mind constantly.
In the service of the Lord.
In the service of the Lord.
Sakya.
Sakya.
To think of the Lord as a friend.
To think of the Lord as a friend.
Dutya.
Dutya.
Acceptance of the post of a messenger.
Virasana.
Acceptance of the post of a watchman.
Acceptance of the post of a watchman.
With a drawn sword at night. Anugama.
Following in the footsteps.
Stavana.
Stavana.
Offering of prayers.
Offering of prayers.
Pranama.
Pranama.
Offering obeisances.
Offering
obeisances.
Snigdesu.
Unto them who are malleable.
Unto them who are malleable.
To the will of the Lord.
To the will of the Lord.
Pandusu.
Pandusu.
And to the sons of Pandu.
Unto the sons of
Pandu.
Jaga.
The universal.
Universal.
Pranatim.
Pranatim.
One who is obeyed.
One who is obeyed.
Cha. End.
And
Vishnu,
Vishnu
of Vishnu,
of Vishnu.
Bhaktin,
Bhaktin
devotion,
devotion.
Karoti,
Karoti
thus Nripati
the king
Charanaravinda
unto his lotus feet.
Translation: Maharaj Pariksit heard that out of his causeless mercy Lord Krishna Vishnu, who is universally obeyed, rendered all kinds of service to the malleable sons of Pandu by accepting posts ranging from chariot driver to president to messenger, friend, night watchman, etc., according to the will of the Pandavas, obeying them like a servant and offering obeisances like one younger in years. When he heard this, Maharaj Pariksit became overwhelmed with devotion to the lotus feet of the Lord. Purport. Lord Krishna is everything to the unalloyed devotees like the Pandavas. The Lord was for them the Supreme Lord, the spiritual master, the worshipful deity, the guide, the chariot driver, the friend, the servant, the messenger, and everything they could conceive of. And thus, the Lord also reciprocated the feelings of the Pandavas. Maharaj Pariksit, as a pure devotee of the Lord, could appreciate the transcendental reciprocation of the feelings of his devotees, and thus he himself also was overwhelmed with the dealings of the Lord. Simply by appreciating the dealings of the Lord with his pure devotees, one can attain salvation. The Lord's dealings with his devotees appear to be ordinary human dealings, but one who knows them in truth becomes at once eligible to go back home, back to Godhead. The Pandavas were so malleable to the will of the Lord that they could sacrifice any moment of energy for the service of the Lord, and by such unalloyed determination they should secure the Lord's mercy in any shape they desired. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita is described how Narada Muni has come to Hanuman. And Narada Muni says, "Oh Hanuman, you are the greatest devotee. You are the greatest devotee. You are fully dedicated to the Lord. And as such, the Lord is unlimitedly merciful to you. Hanuman said, "My dear Narada, please accept my obeisances. My dear Narada, you are speaking in this way because of your own ecstasy. You're seeing everything colored by your ecstasy. But the truth of the matter is that actually the Lord has not been very merciful with me at all. See it like this. When Lord Ramachandra was on earth, all the residents of Ayodhya went back to Godhead. But not me. I had to stay behind. I had to stay behind in Kim Purushavarsha, separated from the Lord. And there, in separation from the Lord, I had to continue the worship of the Lord for the sake of my purification. How can you say that the Lord has bestowed so much mercy upon me? Think of the Pandavas. The Pandavas, they got so much mercy of the Lord because the Lord, he spent so much time with them personally. The Lord, he was living with them in their palace. The Lord, he became so many things. Right? The Lord was acting as their messenger. The Lord was acting as their friend. The Lord was acting as the chariot driver. He became the president of the assembly in the Rajasuya sacrifice. He was the watchman at night who stood with a drawn sword. All these things he did for the Pandavas. Just see how intimately Krishna reciprocated with the Pandavas. And as Hanuman is describing it, then Narada was becoming ecstatic and he started to dance. And then Hanuman started to dance and to dance together. And then Narada said, "Oh, the Pandavas, let's go to the Pandavas." And Hanuman said, "Oh, the Pandavas, let's go to the Pandavas." And then Hanuman said, "I can't go to the Pandavas." And Narada said, "Why not?" He said, "Oh no, they are too casual with the Lord. You know what I mean? I mean, they are just lying with him on the same bed and things like this. I mean, it's like, you know, no, I'm a monkey. I must be very careful, you know. I must quickly follow the etiquette. No. I can't afford, you know, to go to the Pandavas. Oh no, no. I will not go there. I'll stay here and strictly worship my Lord according to the rules and regulations." And in this way, in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami is explaining how Krishna is reciprocating with different devotees, and with different devotees in a more intimate way, and how the Pandavas were extremely fortunate because Krishna was giving so much personal association to the Pandavas. He was living with them, he was their guard, he was just somehow or other very intimately connected with them. And therefore, how could they ever forget Krishna? It was impossible. You know, they lived with Krishna, just as we are remembering the people we are living with, you know, and we see them every day. Okay, same old, right? So how could they forget Krishna? Kunti Devi, Namo Apangaja Nabaya, Nama Pangaja Maline, Nama Pangaja Netraya, Nama Pangaja Ngraye. She is offering obeisances to Krishna. First she starts at Krishna's lotus navel. Then she offers obeisances to Krishna's lotus garland. Then she offers obeisances to Krishna's lotus eyes. And then she offers obeisances to Krishna's lotus feet. And why not starting with Krishna's lotus feet? Because she was his aunt. And it wasn't appropriate. He was supposed to offer obeisances to her. Therefore, she started with the navel. But actually ended with the lotus feet, because she knew very well he is the Supreme Lord. And Kunti Devi was praying. How is it possible that the Aja, the unborn, takes birth? How can this be? Seeing Krishna's transcendental opulences and at the same time seeing how he for who fear personified is afraid, right? Is afraid of Mother Yasoda, who raises a whipping stick. So Kunti Devi is putting all these amazing features. On the one hand, describing Krishna's feature as the Supreme Lord and all his unlimited potencies, and yet how for Yasoda he is a small child who is afraid. Yes, you know, he's the Supreme Lord. What can she do to him?
Huh, what you gonna do to me? I happen to be God, you know.
Right? But Krishna never spoke to his mother like that. Right? We would have. Right? If we would have been God, we would have told our mother, look, do you know who you're speaking to? You know, I'm God, right? Okay, just that you know. We would have told her. But not Krishna. Krishna never mentioned it, that he was God. Krishna simply was afraid. And like a child. He was completely controlled by her like a child. Even when Mother Yasoda saw that clay in the mouth of Krishna, right? She looked in the mouth of Krishna. She sees there the whole universe in the mouth of Krishna. She is seeing herself looking again in the mouth of Krishna. And in this way, she's just stunned and amazed. You know what I mean? How is all this possible in the mouth of my son? Then she started thinking, there may be different possibilities. One is that I've gone mad. You know, she said, but like, that doesn't make sense because I have no history of madness. Why would I suddenly go mad like this? It's doubtful. Then another possibility is that it is Deva Maya and that the demigods are doing this. She said, but I'm an ordinary woman. Why would the demigods do so? Why would they just suddenly interfere in my life? Highly unlikely. Then the only other option is that my son is indeed the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And if he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then I am not the Queen of Vrindavan, and then all these residents are not my subjects, and Mother Yasoda is just sort of falling into a black hole without bottom, you know, like just registering one thought after another. Next moment she sees him crawling on the ground and gets overwhelmed by motherly feelings and just picks him up and takes him on her lap. And she forgets all about his divinity. That is the reciprocation of Krishna. Who can understand how the Lord is just reciprocating with his devotee and becoming what his devotee desires him to be? And more so. At the time of the Rajasuya sacrifice, different services were distributed. And Bhima was put in the kitchen, in charge of the kitchen, because Bhima knew how to eat. And one who knows how to eat usually also has some idea of cooking. Right? So Bhima was in charge of the kitchen. Sahadev was very expert with horses, so he was in charge of the stables. So in this way, various services were distributed, and Krishna took the service of washing the feet of all the guests who were arriving. How is Krishna reciprocating with his devotees? It is just amazing. It's just amazing, right? That he does that. He's the Supreme Lord, but he washes the feet of all the devotees. He doesn't need to do this, you know. He's God. He can give a few blessings. But he conquers like this, you see. I mean, the devotees then naturally by these activities are just shocked and overwhelmed, and their love for Krishna is increasing manifold. And this is what Krishna is doing. He's playing with the hearts of his devotees, and some are churning their feelings to a point that gradually their appreciation for Krishna is just increasing and increasing and increasing. And this is the eternal activity of Krishna. This is what Krishna is doing in the spiritual world. Somehow or other, increasing the love of his devotees. And for that, he's doing anything. For that, he was saying to Rukmini, he said, like, my dear Rukmini, I don't understand how you could have married someone like me when a qualified prince for you was chosen. You know, someone like Shishupal. Shishupal was so wealthy, so incredibly wealthy. I mean, the only one who was as wealthy as Shishupal was Krishna. Otherwise, no one could match the wealth of Shishupal. That's why Shishupal was also a bit envious of Krishna, because this Krishna, he had practically as much wealth as he himself did. I mean, you know, almost, right? He has almost as much wealth as I have, Shishupal was thinking. Right? And, you know, and Krishna says to Rukmini, such a qualified person was chosen for you as a husband, Shishupal, who was very wealthy, Shishupal, who was very strong and very powerful, Shishupal, who had very powerful allies, like Jarasandha, an emperor, was a king of kings, was very close to Shishupal, because Shishupal was brought up by Jarasandha. Just see how close they were, like this, yes. And you know, and you just turned that down for one, like me, who has no qualifications, whose caste is not clear, right? It's not clear whether he's from Vaishya or Kshatriya background, Krishna. All these things are not clear, and you accepted him as a husband, and in this way, Krishna started to diminish his own position, and Rukmini just cracked. She couldn't handle it. It was just too much for her. And in this way, Krishna was just bringing out more and more attachment to Krishna out of the heart of Rukmini. I mean, don't speak like this. How can you diminish yourself like this? You who are so qualified, you who have all good qualities, don't. I cannot hear it. I cannot tolerate it. I cannot bear it. This is too much. Therefore, I'm not worthy of you, Rukmini, and therefore it is better I leave you. How can you speak like this? In this way, Krishna is reciprocating with all his devotees. Uddhava, the best devotee, the very best devotee in Dwarka, in Mathura, there is no devotee like Uddhava. No one. In Dwarka, it is said, when Krishna was there, when he went up to the heavenly planets to bring the parijata Satyabhama, because he had brought one for Rukmini, he had given her the parijata tree. So then Satyabhama wanted. So okay, then you know, and he had to go and he had to bring, and then in the course of all that, he fought with Indra, defeated Indra, and then he also brought down the Sudharma assembly house. And this assembly house was brought to Dwarka. Now, anyone who was in that house, in that assembly house, would not age. So it was a good place to be. Right? You wouldn't get any older in there. Some people stayed in there all the time, you can understand. Wouldn't get any older in this assembly house. That was pretty good. There was no question of disease in that assembly house. And basically the Sat Urmi, the six waves of material existence, hunger, thirst, lamentation, infirmity, old age and death, all these could not happen in the Sudharma assembly house. You couldn't even die in that place. So it was a good place to hang out. So it kind of popular place. Sudharma assembly house, and Krishna therefore would daily meet there with all the residents of Dwarka. But it wasn't just casual, you know, they're hanging out, hey, you know, hey Krish, hey Satyaki, how you doing? Long time no see. Hey, great, you know, like, cool, you know. How's it going in the army lately, you know what I mean? You know, are you like, you know, did some interesting things happen there? You know, no, not like that. In fact, Dwarka is not as casual as that. That's more Vrindavan. But in Dwarka, all the arrangements are more formal. And there in the assembly house, Krishna is seated on a throne. And next to him, on another throne, is seated Vasudev on the right side. On the left side is Satyaki, who is the military commander. And then next to Vasudev, there is another throne. And on this throne, Ugrasena is seated, and the throne of Ugrasena is a little bit forward, because Ugrasena is the ruling king. He's the ruling king. So, you know, in this way, his superiority is also established, although Krishna establishes his own kingdom in the sea in the form of Dwarka. And then in the midst of all this, there is Uddhava. And Uddhava is so learned because he is the disciple of Brihaspati, who is the spiritual master of the demigods, and therefore Uddhava knows everything. And therefore Uddhava, in his learning, can speak in ways that no one can understand. And only Krishna can understand. And thus they speak in riddles and no one can understand. And there's all this intimate exchange going on and all the others are missing out. And then Krishna goes to his private quarters and everyone follows him. And then at one point, after they've been there for a while, Krishna sort of announces, now it's time for me to have a little privacy, and everyone leaves, but not Uddhava. Because Uddhava is part of the privacy. He doesn't think it refers to him. Uddhava stays, and he massages Krishna's feet and so on, because Uddhava is Krishna's close friend, and he can stay in the room anytime. He is the best of all the devotees of Dwarka and Mathura. Then Krishna chooses Uddhava to go as a messenger to Vrindavan. Uddhava, the best one. And Uddhava is his relative, his cousin. He looks like him, even as a body similar to him. Yellow dhoti and everything, darkish complexion, blackish, bluish. I mean, he closely resembles Krishna. So he's the perfect messenger. And Uddhava goes to Vrindavan. And as he goes to Vrindavan, he's thinking, yes, I'll fix that, you know what I mean, that situation. I'm Uddhava, you know, messenger of Krishna. I will, you know, I am disciple of Brihaspati. I will explain to these residents of Vrindavan how Krishna is actually, how he has never left. His spurti, his form is actually present everywhere because Krishna is the Supreme Lord. He's all-pervading. They miss that point. They're in separation from Krishna because Krishna is supposed to live Vrindavan, because they miss this one point, the spurti. And Uddhava comes to Nanda and Yasoda and begins to explain Krishna's all-pervading presence. And Nanda Maharaj is just looking at Uddhava and is thinking, he's just a child. He's a boy. He's still wet behind his ears. You know, he has no idea, you know, what life is all about. He doesn't get it. You know, that I want to see Krishna with my own eyes. That I want to smell his head. Right? That I want to seat him on my lap. That he is my son. You know what I mean? He's talking about him all pervading. What's that got to do with it? You know what I mean? What do I care about that, whether he's all-pervading or not? I want him on my lap. He's my son. I want him to carry my shoes. Who will bring my shoes when my son is not here to bring my shoes? Right? I said, what to do? In this way, Uddhava is learning. He's learning that there is even another level of reciprocation, even a greater level of intimacy. In Dwarka, he gets the most intimate association, and intimate, still more intimate. Gogovinda Maharaj also, in his book, Mathura Meets Vrindavan, addresses this point that Uddhava is just overwhelmed to see how much Krishna is reciprocating with the residents of Vrindavan. Jiva Goswami writes about this theme throughout in his Gopal Champu. It is actually the recurring theme of the Gopal Champu. And there he writes how when they're in Kurukshetra, all the residents of Dwarka, because of the eclipse, and Vasudev has decided that they should go to Kurukshetra because it's a holy place and they're going to do a big sacrifice there. And then, you know, Narada Muni goes to Nanda and he was in Vrindavan and says, you know what's going on? Vasudev is organizing a big yajna in Kurukshetra. Really? Yeah. A big yajna to ward off the negative influence of the grahan, of the eclipse. And Nanda Maharaj, and everyone is invited. The whole universe is invited. Nanda wasn't invited. And Nanda says, really? Really? We're going. Krishna's going to be there. Oh yes, we're going to that sacrifice. Krishna's going to be there. Oh yes, Yes, we will go to see Krishna. And Nanda Maharaj, he goes, and when he reaches, and then he sees Krishna, and Krishna sees him, and when Krishna sees him, Krishna acts in a way of like an emotional state, like Vasudeva has never seen him. And Vasudeva is thinking to himself, but what is this? I mean, he's showing more affection for him than for his own father. And then he says out loud, it's not surprising that Krishna shows so much affection to Nanda, although he's not his real father. After all, he stayed there with them for a long time. Then the Brahmana priests come and they call Vasudeva and they say, he must come now, because the sacrifice, the arrangement for the sacrifice are just at such a state that the person who's given the order for the sacrifice has to now partake in some of the rituals so that all inauspiciousness of the eclipse can be counteracted. So Vasudeva goes to counteract the inauspiciousness. But where is there any inauspiciousness when Krishna is present? There is no inauspiciousness in the presence of Krishna, and Nanda Maharaj doesn't see any sacrifice. Nanda Maharaj doesn't see any inauspiciousness. He sees only Krishna. And in this way, we can see the reciprocation of Krishna with his devotees to different degrees according to the surrender of those devotees. And in Dwarka and Mathura, where that devotion is mixed with Aishwarya, mixed with a sense of awe and reverence for Krishna's position as the Supreme Lord, the devotion is not as intimate as in Vrindavan, where the residents just forget that Krishna is the Supreme Lord and just treat him like very intimately, like a friend or like a son. And Krishna reciprocates, and Krishna likes that even more. Therefore, the reciprocation with different levels of devotees is happening according to different degrees, and the topmost reciprocation is with the residents of Vrindavan. And that is the sum and substance of this verse and purport. So, now are there any questions and comments? I know, it was a storm. A blast. So take a deep breath. Crank up the brain. And ask a question. Rukmini. All glories to Rukmini, who always has questions.
It's amazing that within the interaction of the different devotees, because everyone craves intimacy, intimate relationship, that there's no envy between those that have more intimate relationship with Krishna and those who don't.
Yeah. Externally, sometimes there's jealousy. It's used, you know, to increase the service to Krishna. But there's no envy. There's no desire to minimize someone else. There's not what Shishupal had. Krishna is almost as rich as I am. Come on, you know. Shishupal was almost as rich as Krishna. Let's be real. No one is as rich as Krishna. So, envy is where we are trying to minimize others and increase our own glories. Prabhupada says, envy means happiness when someone else has difficulty, and suffering when someone else has happiness. The spiritual world is free from envy, based on love. Because ultimately, everyone is deep, and everyone is not self-centered, and everyone is not thinking, I am the best servant of Krishna, and therefore I'm getting the most attention, You know, and therefore I am the most important. No. Krishna is the most important. And I want to be the best servant for Krishna. I want to be. Because I want to, you know, I want to increase Krishna's happiness to the maximum that I can. Therefore, if that devotee is serving Krishna in so many ways, I must do better. I must. I must defeat him. I must do better. And thus, the gopis are also competing. It is said there are different groups of gopis known as yutas. And these different groups of gopis, some are supportive of Radharani. They are Suritpaksha. They are friendly groups. Some are Swapaksha, Radharani's own groups. Some are neutral groups, right? And some groups are in competition. They're in competition. And those that are in competition, like, are of course, the ultimate group that is in competition is the group of Chandravali. What can be said? But she always loses in the competition with Srimati Radha. But in the end, she's pleased. Although she gives it her everything to defeat Radharani, in the end Radharani defeats her again, and she's all right. Because she knows. She's ecstatic about it. Because she knows. Krishna's happiness has increased so much. But she gives Radharani a run for her money, you know what I mean? It's not that like Radharani can I am here the uncontested champion, right? There's no one who can, like, you know, come close to me. No. It's a competition. It's a competition. And in this way, she pushes Radharani. She pushes Radharani to make even a greater offering to Krishna. So it's her eternal position to be second to Radharani. God. Second forever. Go to the Italian section of the spiritual world, you know, and start a conspiracy, you know what I mean? And some guy and the guys come with the violin cases, you know. And have a go at Radharani, you know. It's too much to be number two forever. There's no hope to ever become number one. Sorry. Number two. It's worse to be number two than number ten. Because number two, you're almost number one. it's really... It's tough to be number two. Number 10, okay, you know. I'm in the top 10, you know. It's like I'm one of them, you know. I'm in the top 10. I'm among the best, actually. You know what I mean? Yeah. But number two, oh, God, does it hurt, you know, to be number two. God. It's just only one obstacle in my life. Number two. But not in the spiritual world. Because they all want Krishna's happiness. So it's great to be number two. It's fine. I'll be any damn number as long as it increases Krishna's happiness. What's your number? Your number is up. Any other question?
How is it that Krishna is more attracted to one who doesn't push themselves forward but pushes others forward?
How is it that Krishna is more attracted to those who push others forward and not themselves? Well, I think that applies to us who are in the material world. and who are sadhakas. This applies to sadhakas. Amongst the sadhakas, or those who are engaged in devotional service in practice, it's about purification. And therefore, when someone is actually realizing or attempting to act on a humble platform, that purchases Krishna. So humility purchases Krishna. In the spiritual world, it may not be like that entirely. On the eternal liberated platform, the devotees may sometimes push themselves forward. There they can do so. Because there these things are different. You know, Madhu Mangal is acting quite arrogant, actually, you know, many times, right? He's a brahmana, you know, superior. And like, you know, Krishna's a Vaishya. So he gives blessings, you know what I mean, to everyone. Yeah. But that's all necessary for the pastimes. But for the sadhakas, yes. The sadhakas, they're always eager to push someone else forward. And of course we see that Radharani also is eager to push the other gopis forward, so that Krishna meets with them, because she's compassionate. And she takes pleasure in glorifying others. It's very pleasurable to push others forward. It's actually a blissful thing. Once we start doing it, you know what I mean? Instead of going like, you know, I mean, you know, it's very nice, you know, that they're all also trying to make advancement in devotional service. Of course, you know, I mean, they're still very inexperienced, you know what I mean? They haven't been around as long as I have, you know what I mean? Or, you know, it's like, but I'm impressed, you know, how so-and-so, who's junior to me, in such a short time, really got such a grasp on the scripture. I'm really impressed. You know, of course, you know, I mean, like, you know, he's not on my level yet, but you know, I mean, he's not on the level yet. You know, that, like, you know, we older devotees are on, but he's come a long way. Promising, I would say. I would really say. Yeah. It's very difficult to just be so generous. So just generosity, humility purchased Krishna. Yeah. Sanatan, Rupa and Sanatan, you know, they were just so humbled, and at one point Krishna's calling, stop it. It's just too much, you know. This humility is just too much. Can you stop it now, you know? I mean, it's enough, right? Please, it's just too much. Can't take it anymore. So that's the nature of humility. It just touches Krishna's heart. And if someone is just on and on, you humble and humble, Krishna is just, stop it now. Okay. It's like Krishna loses his indifference. Pandita Samadarshina is equal to all, right? Equal to all. But Krishna just becomes partial. He becomes partial to one who is humble. So that's very much desired.
I want to know what happened to after Krishna was taken to Mathura by Vasudeva and Devaki, and Vasudeva were locked inside the jail. Did ever Krishna afterwards visited them, or?
When Krishna was taken to Mathura by Akrura, whose name is not cruel, and who is actually was cruel for taking Krishna out of Vrindavan, and then did Krishna ever come back to Vrindavan? He never left Vrindavan. Uddhava was right. Vrindavana Parichaya. Padam ekam gacchati. Krishna doesn't go one step out of Vrindavan. Uddhava was right. Nanda Maharaj didn't care about that. But it's true, Krishna was still there. He never left. Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. When it seems that Krishna leaves Vrindavan, then it's Krishna's expansion, Vasudev Krishna, who is outside of Vrindavan. Did he ever go back? He's always busy killing a few more demons. What to do? Just a few more. Just now coming. A few more demons to kill. He sent Balaram, sent Uddhava. What do I do? If I don't kill these demons first, then all these demons will come to Vrindavan. So how can I go to Vrindavan when they'll come there? And then, you know, they cause so much disturbance for the residents of Vrindavan. So how can I go? Cannot go. I'm in total separation. Can I go? Krishna's in Dwarka. You know, everyone is quiet in the palace, tiptoeing. Shh. Krishna didn't get up this morning. He's not well. He has a headache. Then Satyabhama, who is just rebellious and always has to, you know, like just argue about everything. Satyabhama says, I have enough of this hypocrisy. I have enough of this hypocrisy. Everybody knows, Satyabhama, please, Krishna has a headache. I can't tolerate it any longer. We're walking around here with this whole Satyabhama, please, Satyabhama. You know, like, I mean, it is too much, you know. Krishna has a headache. Satyabhama, Krishna has a headache. Everybody knows that Krishna doesn't have a headache. Satyabhama, everybody knows that Krishna didn't get up because he is going through intense separation. Satyabhama, Satyabhama, how can you do this? You know, Satyabhama. I mean, you're destroying everything. Satyabhama. The truth is the truth, and it will be spoken, and I will point it out to everyone. Krishna is actually in separation from the residents of Vrindavan. Satyabhama, you know. And do you know that when Krishna is at night resting in the arms of his queen, Satyabhama, not this, no, Satyabhama, not this. Do you know that he is actually speaking the names of the gopis in Vrindavan?
How could you say this?
Krishna is actually in separation from the residents of Vrindavan. Completely. He cannot go. He wants to, but he cannot go to Vrindavan. Because all those demons will go. Cause so much trouble. Better he stays in Mathura. It's a big city. There are walls. You know what I mean? In Mathura, you can deal with some demons. But Vrindavan is an open village. What are you going to do in a place like Vrindavan? You know? And if something happens to one of the residents of Vrindavan, I will never forgive myself. Krishna thinks, no. I cannot go to Vrindavan. Even if it breaks my heart, I will not go to Vrindavan. Are we finished now? I'm totally exhausted. Oh, God. Krishna's not going to Vrindavan.